The story usually goes something like this. A woman sends a nude photo of herself to her boyfriend, imagining that the image will stay private. In time, the romance disintegrates, and the woman ends the relationship. The man, outraged at having been jilted, posts the photos or videos on a porn website. Or maybe he emails them to the woman's employer. Maybe he tries to auction them on eBay. Seems like an obvious violation of privacy at the very least, or at worst, a form of cyber sexual assault. 11 states have now passed laws banning such activity, known colloquially as revenge porn, and Nevada could soon be another. Joining us from Maryland to discuss her experience as a victim of revenge porn is professor and activist Anne-Marie Cherini. Anne-Marie Cherini, welcome to the program. Your boyfriend had nude photos. It's safe to assume that when you share these images with your boyfriend, you expected they would stay private.
I have emails explicitly stating that these are to stay private and he's not to share them with anyone, yes.
Okay, you broke up with your boyfriend then. How did he react initially?
He became very angry. We were on the telephone. It was a long-distance relationship. And he threatened to start an eBay auction and auction off the CD of the images. And when I, you know, begged him and pleaded him not to do it, his last words to me were, "I will destroy you."
What did you do at that point?
Well, I called the police. In hindsight, I realized that I was asking law enforcement to stop a threat, which ultimately they can't do. But I felt that that might have been to at least get the awareness of law enforcement was my first state. So I wanted some help. From there was nothing I can do but wait to see if he followed through with the threat.
And he did follow through.
Yes, he did. The next day.
The next day.
I received an email that the auction had been posted.
When these photos went public, how did it affect your personal life?
The first time I was just in, I was in shock, absolute shock. I went into crisis management. I, you know, contacted eBay. I really just kept everything very, very private. I shut myself in my house for a few days and handled it. After that happened, I blocked him and everyone related to him from contacting me. And then 14 months after blocking him, he did it again. The second time was much more devastating. It was on a porn website. The site had been live for 14 days. It had over 4,000 views. After again going to law enforcement and realizing that this was my life and there was no way to end this, that he was going to keep posting these pictures again and again and again for the rest of my life, I attempted suicide because I realized that the only way to end this was to end my life.
How widespread were these photos? Where did they appear?
The first time with the eBay auction, he posted links on all the Facebook pages of the college where I teach. He sent links to friends and family. He had gotten, I didn't realize it, but he had looked over my shoulder and gotten all my passwords for like my email accounts. So he had emailed my babysitter, friends, my ex-husband. He sent CDs in the mail to the chair of the English department where at the college. And to my son's kindergarten teacher at the Catholic school where he attends.
This obviously must have, you'd said people at the college were emailed. This must have affected your professional life as well.
Yes, it did.
As you look back on it, were you naive in thinking that nude photos would always remain private?
Absolutely not.
How so?
Well, this man and I, we dated in the 80s, and we were engaged to be married in 1990. The history, this was a long-term relationship. This wasn't something that I entered lightly. I had reservations and I should have followed my gut. But this was a long-term committed loving relationship and there was no reason for me to think that he would ever betray me in such a vicious manner. I had absolutely no reason. Everybody who knew him, you know, my friends, my family, were completely shocked.
Also with us is Charlotte Law. She is an activist in California. Charlotte, welcome to the program. Charlotte Law, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay, very good. Thanks for joining us. When did you become an advocate for revenge porn victims like Anne-Marie Cherini?
It was about 2.5 years ago, my daughter was hacked, and a picture, she had taken about 100 pictures in her bedroom with her cell phone, and one picture was topless, and she sent them to her computer to save them, never intending to show the topless picture to anyone. She was hacked, and the picture was put on a revenge porn website. And it was then that I realized that there was a hacking scheme, and I started talking with dozens of victims all over the country who had been hacked and who had appeared on this website. And I started an FBI investigation, and then I continued to reach out to victims and started pushing for legislation against revenge porn.
Why does what happened to her still qualify as revenge porn? This was not a bitter ex. This was just a random hacker.
Yes, but I see the term revenge porn as pretty much society bringing revenge on women, you know, men against women, because disproportionately the victims tend to be females. About 90% of the victims are. And when my daughter's picture goes on the site and other victims' pictures go on the website, the followers of the site then harass the victim, send the photos to the employer, to the family. They try to ruin that victim's life, try to drive them to suicide. And so that's why I think the term, in some respects, is adequate. In other respects, you're right, it is not adequate because it isn't an angry ex in many cases.
Mm-hmm. Now, as you're an activist in California and you are advocating for the passage of legislation there, what would that legislation do?
Well, I think that nude or topless pictures or nude or topless videos should require consent. I think that we know that civil laws are not adequate. The perpetrators tend to not have assets, and they are not afraid of civil suits. They usually don't show up in court. The victims also, if they want to bring a civil suit, that means they're going to have to put up about $60,000 to $70,000 to bring a case to fruition, which they may not have. They usually don't have. And there's no hope that they're going to receive money on the other end of that lawsuit. Plus, in civil suits, the victim's identity is then going to be associated with nude photos because the judge does not have to allow the victim to remain anonymous. So the civil route simply does not work. It's not effective. And just the fact that we're bringing criminal laws into place is working. It is helping to curb revenge porn. I've talked to a couple of would-be perpetrators who said they were about to submit their ex's photos and stopped because they did not want to go to jail. And that's what I find is that the website owners and the pervs tend to be very afraid of law enforcement, even though they're not afraid of civil suits.
Now, in your daughter's case, the photos were selfies. She took them of herself. And as I understand it, under California's current revenge porn laws, she is not protected. California's law also doesn't apply to hacked images. Do you see those as serious flaws in the legislation as it exists right now?
Well, we are remedying the selfies problem currently. There's a law, SB 1255, which I actually testified on a few weeks ago, and it's weaving its way through Sacramento right now, and it would change the law to include selfies. So I agree it's deficient as SB 255, which is what we passed last September, but I think we're going to be remedying that. And hack, you know, it's true that hacking is already a criminal offense. So that's why the FBI took the case, and that's why the website owner who had allegedly paid this hacker for my daughter's photo and photos of the other victims, that's why he was arrested in January of this year, and a trial will be starting in September of this year.
If you were just joining us, we are talking about the practice known as revenge porn. That is the posting of private photographs, usually intimate photographs, often following the breakup of romances and such. We're talking with Charlotte Laws. She is a California activist, Anne-Marie Cherini, who is also an activist and a victim herself of the practice. And we're joined now by Mark Randazza. He is a First Amendment attorney here in Las Vegas. Mark, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Your situation seems pretty interesting to me because, on the one hand, you're a First Amendment attorney, and that's what you work with much of the time. And many of the concerns about revenge porn legislation have to do with the possibility that will limit free speech. You've also worked to get a few revenge porn sites shut down.
Yes.
It seems to be a bit of a digression there between the two. How do you explain that for us?
Yeah, it's funny. When I first started going after these kind of websites, I was accused of betraying the cause. You know, I represent First Amendment protected businesses, including adult entertainment businesses. And I got a call from some of my victims who said, you know, why are you doing this? You're supposed to be the guy sticking up for porn. And I said, look, porn is a pretty simple thing to me. it should be of adults, and they should be of consenting adults. Other than that, everything goes. And if you can't live by those two rules, you're on the outside of the wall as far as I'm concerned.
So yet at the same time, you think revenge porn is a civil matter to be worked out in the courts and not to be treated as a crime. Why so?
Yeah, I mean, I feel for the victims. I started getting into this. I didn't get into this for the riches and money. I'll tell you, I haven't earned a dime off of any of these cases. It's been a money-losing proposition. I do it because it's the right thing. I get calls from the victims, male and female. I think the assessment of it as 90% female is inaccurate. I'd say it's probably closer to 50-50, maybe 60-40. I just find men tend to be more embarrassed about it and tend to not want to bring a case. But the real problem here is that anytime we see somebody whose feelings are hurt, we have this knee-jerk reaction, that we want to put in more criminal laws. We already have more people incarcerated in this country than any other country in the world. Do we really need yet another criminal law? And the criminal laws are not going to be effective. They may affect one or two people, but for the most part, if you go down to Metro and you say, hey, while you're dealing with the rapes, the murders, the armed robberies, the arsons, I also have somebody here who's a victim of having naked pictures of themselves on the internet. Law enforcement is not going to prioritize this. So I think the problem is we do have civil remedies that can work. I've shown that they can work, but we need better civil remedies. The problem here is intermediary immunity from liability. Yeah, the jerk who puts up these pictures, whether it's an ex-boyfriend or whether it is a hacker, that person may find themselves judgment-proof, but the only reason these websites don't continue to exist is because they've always been run by idiots. I'll tell you right now how to run one of these sites. Put it up as a user-generated site. Don't pay other people for the images, and they'll be up forever.
But what are you, in a nutshell, how would you summarize your concerns about the idea of laws against revenge porn as opposed to civil actions? Do you think it's beginning to tread on the First Amendment?
Yes, very much so. Look, you can have harmful activity that is subject to civil liability that wouldn't offend the First Amendment, while criminal liability would. A good example is defamation. There have been criminal libel laws across the country. One by one, they've fallen because the First Amendment isn't going to tolerate the heavy hand of government, the heavy hand of law enforcement, and the heavy punishment of incarceration when you can have a law that, by definition, it has to be somewhat nebulous. You have a very difficult time defining when something is protected expression, when something is actually not protected. But when you have civil liability, you can measure that. You have a continuum of liability.
Now, Nevada does not have anti-revenge porn laws at this point. You have worked to get a couple of these revenge porn websites taken down. What tactics did you and your clients use to accomplish this?
Yeah, we got creative instead of just, getting irrationally angry. We went one of them. I had the very first one that we took down. I had a client here in Nevada, a company called ViaView, and it runs a website called cheaterville.com. And its owner said, this is a horrible thing, and I want to get this taken care of. So he wanted to fund a lawsuit against the very first one. We wound up putting aside a budget for that, and then we just decided to buy it from the jerk because he sold it to us quite cheaply. We bought it, and within seconds of taking control of it, shut it down. there have been others that media exposure has caused it to shut down, and others where we've filed lawsuits. In particular, there was one that had, I spoke with the owner of it, and I said, look, you can shut this down, or I will be coming for you in a way that you're not going to be happy about. And there's a certain percentage of underage victims on these sites. I had one victim that was from California. I mean, this poor girl was in high school, had to change her parent. Her mother said that they have to change her name because of all the harassment. Her college was delayed. I mean, this really does affect the victims. And I feel for them deeply, especially representing them. You take on their emotions for a little bit. But we went after the site under the civil child porn laws. And when we hit them with that, they shut down.
Charlotte Laws, you've said so already, you think there should be criminal punishment for some of the kinds of actions that Mark Rendazzo has been been articulated for people who traffic in revenge porn.
Absolutely.
How would you respond to what you've heard?
Well, I think that non-consensual pornography is certainly much more serious offense than many of the current crimes, such as identity theft or burglary or drug possession or destruction of property. And, you know, you steal someone's credit card and that carries a jail time. And it's really much less severe than revenge porn. I mean, revenge porn, you lose jobs. It literally will destroy someone's entire life. And there are victims and parents of victims who will say that revenge porn is worse than rape. That's why I call it cyber rape. If you talk to the parents of Audrey Potts or Rheta Parsons, and these are girls who killed themselves over revenge porn, they will say that it was the revenge porn, it was the dissemination of the photographs that drove them to suicide, not the sexual assaults that happened weeks before. So it's a very serious crime, and I am enlightened by the fact, I'm very happy about the fact that law enforcement is taking this seriously now. It's true, 2 years ago they weren't, but now they are. They're cracking down on it. They're building up their cyber crimes divisions, and that's what we need. I mean, they have to learn how to tackle this, and law enforcement is very old school in general. They're not used to internet crimes and technology, and so they have to learn about that. They have to get up to speed. They have to build up those departments because there's an awful lot of crime on the internet currently. And so I'm happy that both law enforcement and politicians are taking this seriously, moving forward, trying to protect victims. It's a very, very serious situation, and that's why criminal laws are needed.
Well, you've just heard Mark Randazza talking about the idea of being able to solve this problem with creativity and in terms of civil actions and such, but you don't think that's strong enough?
No, it's not strong enough, and there are very few attorneys who are even willing to look at this issue. First of all, most attorneys don't even know anything about this issue, and there are some that are learning about it in the last year or two. But when I first started this crusade against revenge porn, I spoke to, I think, 9 attorneys, including Mr. Randazza at the beginning. And Mr. Randazza, I will say, is the most knowledgeable that I've spoken with about this issue. But most of the other attorneys I talked to, they really didn't know anything. And so they don't have the capability to even bring civil suits. But civil suits are not adequate because, as I said earlier, you know, I told you the reasons why they're not adequate, because of the fact that the perpetrators and the website owners don't have assets, the fact that the victims want to remain anonymous, the fact that the victims don't have the money to put up to bring these suits forward. These kids that run these sites are 20-something-year-old kids, often who live at home with their parents. It's almost exactly the same prototype of individual. They are very afraid of law enforcement. Okay. They do not show up in court if there is a civil suit against them in most cases.
Now, Mark Randazza, you've said that these laws like this would trample into constitutional rights of the people who are putting up these sites. How so?
Yeah, I don't think that these laws will wind up being applied evenly. I don't think they'll be applied clearly. The problem is it's still expressive activity, whether you like the expression or not. And the unfortunate thing is, you know, I feel like I have been a strong advocate against involuntary porn. I've donated hundreds of thousands of dollars of my firm's time to fighting it. When a criminal law gets passed here in Nevada, I'm going to switch sides and I'll represent the victims of this unconstitutional law. When you have expression like this, how do you create the definition that it isn't voluntary or whether it's a matter of public interest?
But when you talk about expression, if we're dealing with, say, posting nude photos or intimate photos, in some cases photos that the poster didn't even take or help to create.
Sure.
Isn't that kind of pushing the definition of expression awfully, awfully far?
It is, but that's what, you know, we live in the United States of America, and that's still important to us. And I'm not saying that I think the expression should be unregulated or it should be unpunished.
Give us an example of where perhaps it should be regulated and or punished.
Well, the reason, you know, some of the issues that Charlotte has articulated, they're real problems, but the way to solve them is not through after the fact punishment. If somebody posts this kind of thing and they've already ruined someone's life, then throwing them in jail, what is that doing? I mean, it's not really going to create a deterrent. You know why? Because you can use a proxy server to post this stuff. You use the Tor browser, no one will ever find you. The NSA can't even find you if you use the Tor browser. So the next generation of dirtbags out there are just going to use Tor, and you get away with it. What the problem is that you have intermediary immunity. If somebody posted these things on the internet, but nobody could ever find them, where would the problem be? I mean, if I could post, you know, pictures of Charlotte on the internet and they couldn't ever be found, there would be no harm. You can mitigate the harm. The problem is Google simply thumbs its nose at you and mocks you from behind Section 230. The websites themselves will do that when somebody finally runs one that isn't an idiot. They'll simply create it as a user-generated content site that has no liability. If you have intermediary liability and you have prevailing party attorney's fees, I can tell you, I know dozens of attorneys across the country who would be glad to do this even on a pro bono basis. But if I told them you can also get some prevailing party fees, I'd have people knocking down my door to help.
So at Charlotte Laws, why shouldn't there be provisions for, I guess, for compensation, as Mark Randazzo is saying, civil action, if that would be, compensation, or if it would constitute punitive damage?
Where are you going to get the money from? I mean, I don't understand. If you have these judgment-proof defendants, I don't see where the compensation is coming from for the attorneys. But I also just want to bring up the point that we do have exceptions to the First Amendment. And I support the First Amendment. I'm a very strong proponent of the First Amendment. But we do have exceptions, and exceptions are needed. We have, you know, child pornography as an exception, incitement, obscenity, fighting words, fraud, libel, discrimination. There's no reason why revenge porn can't be an exception. Free speech is supposed to be about public matters. It's about voicing legitimate concerns in society. And nude and sexually explicit pictures of ordinary people is different. It's a private matter. And in the case U.S. versus Petrovic, the court held that First Amendment protection should be less rigorous for private matters. So I don't see why that can't be an exception. I don't see why it can't be narrowly drawn in a way that works for the First Amendment. And I also, when you talk about the Google and Yahoo and these providers, you know, they are, in my view, very good with complying with copyright law. When you send them a takedown notice telling them that there's a copyright violation and they have to, remove that photograph, you know, de-index that photograph, they do it expeditiously in accordance with the law. There's no reason why they can't do that with respect to revenge porn or non-consensual pornography. It would not be burdensome for them.
Mark Randazzo?
I totally agree with that. That's the problem is these intermediaries, they don't have immunity from copyright infringement. So these intermediaries who scream and yell that it would ruin their business if they had to do anything to comply with a takedown request, don't do that when it comes to copyright. They do act expeditiously. So, you know, what I advocated when Colorado was passing its law, I talked to some of the legislators there, and I tried to get them not to pass a criminal law, but really to make this a right of publicity issue. Everybody has the right to control their own persona, and if we had stronger right of publicity laws, you could use that as an exemption to Section 230, and then you would have the same jump as quickly as you ask them to reaction from intermediaries. But the intermediaries currently continue to mock the victims because they don't care because they have no liability. We have statutorily made them immune from liability. All we have to do is either work around that or modify that. And I think this problem gets mitigated by a factor of 90%.
Charlotte Laws, Nevada may be among the next states to draft anti-revenge porn legislation. If it does so, what is your advice to legislators? What should be included in such a law?
Well, you definitely want to include selfies. You want to include any kind of non-consensual pornography. And you don't want to have an intent clause. You don't want to say the perpetrator has to have an intent to cause severe emotional distress, which is current in the California law. It's not in the amendment, but in the original California law, because some of these people will post pictures because they want to get internet famous or because they think it's funny or they want to get lots of followers online, and there can be lots of different reasons. They do it for money. And so, you know, when someone burglarizes a house, the police don't say, well, what was your intent? Did you want to cause severe emotional distress? And if the burglar says no, they don't say, oh, okay, well, then okay, we won't arrest you. The intent should have nothing to do with it. So So, I mean, that would be my advice. I mean, Marianne Franks is a professor who's written up some very some excellent ideas for legislation and drafting and bill language, both on the state and the federal level. So, she, you know, she's got, you know, printed up information about exactly guides for legislators, and that's usually what I hand to the legislators and tell them to contact her for further details on that.
Mark Rendazza, how would you like to see this state's law written, and what would you advise the Attorney General?
I would advise the Attorney General to not listen to anything that this group puts out. You know, a law professor isn't even a member of the bar, is writing these things in any state, is writing these things, and it is more of an agenda-driven anger fest, and don't listen to it. Make this an intellectual property issue. Make it a right of publicity issue. Create civil liability. And my God, don't listen to the advice to take intent out of it. We want to have a strict liability criminal statute. So somebody posts an image for, I mean, heck, let's say you have an adult entertainment model that is trying to get more famous, and her boyfriend posts these pictures to try to help her get a contract. And she decides she's angry about it afterwards. Well, fair enough. You should ask her permission. But he's off to jail? Are you kidding? And this is just an example I can come up with right off the top of my head.
But
we want to pass a criminal law with no intent?
But
Please stay away from the legislature with such dumb ideas. They come up with dumb enough ideas on their
own. There are surely, though, I mean, there are a lot of victims, real victims. What should happen on their behalf?
Follow the money. The people who are really profiting from this are not here. They are in Silicon Valley. They are mocking the victims from behind the wall of their immunity. You've got to put a hole in that immunity. If you can put a hole in statutory immunity that's only about 10 years old, that is way better than slicing off yet another piece of the First Amendment because you've got yet another group of people who are upset who decide, you know, the First Amendment's just a little too big for us and our personal cause needs to slice this off. Good Lord, this is something that should be done sparingly, that should be done
for criminal laws in such an incorrect way, Mr. Rendazza, you really are. You know, we're just trying to protect victims, and we know the civil laws are not working. And there, you know, there are other approaches. I mean, I even like the idea of 18 U.S.C. 2257 and tweaking that law, which is actually a porn industry law, so you probably know about that. And currently it's an indexing law that requires the porn industry to have a driver's license on file to make sure that there aren't underage people in nude videos or nude pictures.
Charlotte, forgive me, but we're kind of up against the clock. And Amory Chirini, I want to give you the last word in about half a minute or so. What kind of action should be taken in Nevada, and how would you like to see the state's law written?
What I would really like to see is informed individuals like Mark working with us. My position on this is that when online stalking and harassment laws were put in place, the incidence of online stalking and harassment decreased. Prior to that, when stalking and harassment laws were put into place, the incidence of stalking and harassment decreased. So
Anne-Marie, please forgive me, Anne-Marie, but unfortunately the Skype connection we've got with you is beginning to cut in and out, and we're kind of up against the clock as well. So we've got to call time on this, but our thanks, Charlotte Laws and Anne-Marie Chirini are advocates to ban revenge porn. Mark Rendazza is an attorney practicing First Amendment law here in Las Vegas. Thank you all very much for joining us today.
Pleasure.
Thank you.